The first American volunteer group of the Chinese Air Force, better known as the Flying Tigers, was composed of pilots from the United States Army Air Corps, Navy, and Marine Corps, recruited under secret presidential authority. Following the attack on Pearl Harbor in 1941, they were the first Americans to directly engage with the Japanese, and their exploits became the stuff of legend. Samuel Kleiner's new book, The Flying Tigers, tells the story of 300 individuals who were effectively paid mercenaries, secretly recruited by a mysterious shell company that the United States government had created to circumvent its official stance on non-intervention in the war. As U.S.-China relations are increasingly in the news, we feel it's important to understand just how intertwined our nation's histories really are. The Flying Tigers are hailed as heroes in China, their story lesser known statewide. Samuel Kleiner has written the new book, The Flying Tigers, the untold story of the American pilots who waged a secret war against Japan. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Sam Kleiner to the roundtable this morning. Sam, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really nice to have you on the program. A very enjoyable, gripping account the book is. I thank you for writing it. Give us a sense of what brought you to the story.
Absolutely. So I'm 31 years old. My grandfather was a navigator on a B-25 in the Pacific Theater, and I grew up, you know, going to visit growing up in Arizona, going to visit the Air Museum with him and hearing his stories from the war, and always had this interest in World War II. And the story of the Flying Tigers is quite unique in the story of World War II because these guys, as you said, were recruited on a secret mission authorized at the highest levels of the Roosevelt administration before Pearl Harbor to go and fight against the Japanese in China. And the first kind of experience I had with them was when I was in graduate school at Yale. I stumbled across these trove of love letters in a basement archive between a nurse in the unit and a pilot. And the nurse had done her nursing degree at Yale. And these tattered letters told just an incredible human story about two individuals who were part of this unit. And the pilot was tragically killed in their last battle. And from then on, I set out to kind of find out the human story of these Flying Tigers. And the image of the shark face plane or the John Wayne movie or the stuff of legend. But I wanted to figure out who were the Flying Tigers and what were their stories, and that's the book that I think this tells.
You quote and you work with a lot of documents and primary sources in the book, a lot of families of these men and women who were included in this. What was it like working with them and finding out those stories firsthand?
Absolutely. So in 2015, I went to the Flying Tigers reunion, and they've been having these reunions every year since 1952. Obviously, by now, there's not that many Flying Tigers left. In fact, now there's just one left, Frank Lozonski, who lives down in Georgia. And I became very close with the families of a lot of the Tigers. And they really took me in as, you know, really the first outside historian in decades who's gotten to spend time talking with these families and showing me tons of documents, letters, diaries, all kinds of incredible stuff, including a lot of the photographs that are in the book that tell the story of the Flying Tigers. And I was ultimately able, working with the family of Claire Chenault, who is the commander of the unit, to get these incredible combat reports that tell the day-by-day story of the Flying Tigers. And that's really been at the core of what this was about. You know, they say the first casualty of war is truth, and I wanted to tell the true story of the Flying Tigers, and the only way I could really do that was working with the families, getting the stuff that you can't find anywhere else, and getting to tell this authentic story of what these pilots were about and what this mission was. And it's just an incredible story.
The Flying Tigers are, as I mentioned in the introduction, praised as heroes in China. Why is it a different story here in the United States, especially when it was such major news during the war itself?
It's interesting, and I think that it kind of goes to a, you know, so they became this major story in the U.S. because on December 20th, 1941, so less than 2 weeks after Pearl Harbor, The Flying Tigers took on a group of Japanese bombers that were going to bomb Kunming in China and took down a number of Japanese planes. And that story was written up in Time magazine on December 29th amidst the coverage of the destruction of Pearl Harbor and the loss of a series of battles across the Pacific. And it just became a grabbing story for the U.S. in those early moments of the war. John Wayne seized on the story and made the movie in 1942, The Flying Tigers. But over the decades, we've, you know, just lost our connection with the so many stories from the Greatest Generation and from the war. And obviously, you know, there are later wars in Asia that kind of took over our national conscience. And I wanted to help bring back one of the, you know, the great stories from the Greatest Generation. I think it's one of the great untold stories from that era. But as you said, in China, they're still celebrated as heroes. And so when people like Frank Lazansky go to visit China, they're, you know, swarmed in the streets. And I thought that was just so interesting that, you know, here are these guys, you know, Frank lives down in Columbus, Georgia, and not many people probably know that he's a flying tiger. But when he goes to China, he's, you know, this kind of, you know, almost mythical figure. And so I wanted to, you know, kind of tell a bit about that. And I think it tells us something important that we should keep in mind about the U.S.-China relationship, that, you know, we obviously have our disagreements now, but we're not destined to be enemies, that there are these stories of cooperation between the U.S. and China that we don't often think of.
So that's what makes the story so incredible when you read it, to realize that members of U.S. armed forces were fighting under China's flag.
Absolutely. And so this is under, you know, the Chiang Kai-shek, the nationalist regime that was in power in China at the time. But, you know, for us, World War II goes from December 7, 1941 up through VJ Day in 1945. But for the Chinese, the Second World War, is the Second Sino-Japanese War, as it's called, runs from 1937 to 1945. And it's just an incredibly brutal war of occupation. And, you know, some people might know about the Rape of Nanking, but just the ongoing bombing that also happened and the destruction of cities like Chongqing. And all of that's kind of packed in the book, but told through the perspective of these handful of Americans who were there. And I think it's important that we keep in mind, a lot of people say that China is the forgotten ally of the war. We know about the role of the British and the Soviets, but China was considered, you know, the fourth of the four allied powers that helped to win the war. And I think it's important that, you know, as we think through the U.S. relationship with China today, to keep that in mind and to think, to remember that there are these important ties that bind us going back, you know, a number of decades.
When you were investigating the story, what was it that I was talking about some of the sources, and obviously there were a lot of primary sources, but and a lot of documents. Did we keep really good notes on all of this, or were there challenges for you in finding out the whole story?
Well, I was able to get, you know, just a huge amount of information, and, you know, to kind of cull through that and figure out, you know, what stories you want to tell was obviously a challenge. But I think that, you know, it's really a testament to the fact that these guys, you know, did take very good notes. And I think about today how, you know, I don't keep a diary. I don't really write letters. I send text messages and write emails. But these guys were writing, you know, long handwritten letters home to their families that were, you know, telling in great depth not only what they were doing, but how they were feeling. They were filling out these daily combat reports that were giving in-depth descriptions of what they were doing in the air. And most of those documents were just kind of stored away after the war. And because they weren't part of the normal Army Air Corps, their combat reports didn't end up in the National Archives. So they ended up in this basement in Georgetown in a private collection. And I found, you know, working with the Chenault family, these binders full of combat reports that tell, you know, these in harrowing detail what these pilots were doing. And I think that, you know, I'm really excited to be able to bring that story now to the public and to tell, you know, the real story of the Flying Tigers, because the John Wayne movie is a great movie, but it's pretty much completely made up. And so for decades, you know, we recognize that plane, but we don't know what this story was actually about. And this is the real, authentic story of the Flying Tigers.
Tell us about the leader of the Tigers, a civilian who was recruited to help China's Air Force.
Absolutely. So Claire Chennault is a kind of a classic underdog character. He's from the backwoods of Louisiana. He struggles through school. He barely gets into the Army. He has to kind of fight his way to become a pilot. He ultimately becomes one of the most successful stunt pilots in the Army Air Corps in that early period, kind of a predecessor to the Blue Angels. He's performing at air shows all over the country with his group of three planes called the Flying Trapeze. And when they're in Miami in 1935, a man approaches them at a party and says, I really liked, you know, what I saw. Would you be interested in coming and working for the Chinese government and advising us on our Air Force? And he says, I'm kind of, he's got a family, he's got a wife and seven kids. And at the time, he doesn't want to do that. But he keeps clashing with his commanders in the Army. And eventually, in 1937, he says, that's what I need to really make my impact on the world. And he writes this long letter to his brother, kind of laying out his reasons, saying, there's a chance this won't amount to anything, but there's a chance this could change history. And he has this kind of sense that he really wants to leave a legacy. So he goes to China and becomes very close with Madame Chiang Kai-shek, the wife of the Chinese premier. And he helps to kind of shape Chinese air strategy. And then eventually, in 1941, as China is losing more and more territory, the war is looking really terrible, he's sent to Washington, D.C., and he's part of these secret conversations with the Roosevelt administration to get American pilots who get leave from the armed forces and 100 P-40 fighter planes, and they go to China through this covert operation to help the Chinese. And that's kind of part of the Roosevelt strategies. We're not going to get into this war, but under the table, we're going to do what we can to help the Chinese, to help the British. And it's just a fascinating story where you have these kind of backroom meetings. You've got, kind of some larger-than-life Washington characters like Tommy the Corcoran, they call them, who was kind of one of the first major lobbyists in Washington helping to arrange this. There's shell companies that are helping to arrange the transfer of the planes, money is being transferred. And so it's not just, kind of your typical World War II story. You've got a lot of fascinating stuff. And this is really a covert action before that term really came into prominence.
You talk about this under the table, and it's a fascinating part of the book. Talk a little bit about just how involved the White House is in all of this, and of course, Roosevelt's part in it.
Of course. So a lot of this comes from original documents. Roosevelt's signature is on some documents related to this. And then his Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Morgenthau, was really one of the main guys behind it. There was this kind of early China lobby that had been set up in Washington where, T.V. Soong, the brother of Madame Chiang Kai-shek, was kind of the point person on trying to cultivate leaders in Washington, would have them over for these elaborate dinners at his house. And they built relations with people like Morgenthau. And so there are meetings at the White House, and we have Morgenthau's notes from this, and no one's really examined them in great depth, where he, kind of lays out, we're going to secretly send these planes to China, and Roosevelt signs off on it. And there was even at one point conversation, which ultimately didn't come to fruition, about sending bombers over to help the Chinese, and they might attack Japan. And this is, just kind of the bold thinking that was going on in the administration said we're not at war, but we think we will be at some point, so we want to help the Allies where we can. Roosevelt gives a speech in December 1940, his Arsenal of Democracy speech, basically saying, we're not at war, but we're going to be the Arsenal of Democracy, helping the Allies wherever we can. He talks about airplanes and China and Britain, and we're doing as much as we could, basically, to help the Allies out at that point, even though we weren't in the war, and this is part of that effort.
When it's all done, what happens to the Tigers? They are officially disbanded by the U.S. military.
Yeah, so they're disbanded in July of 1942 and kind of reintegrated back into the U.S. Army. And it's just amazing what happens. A lot of these guys come home. There's huge homecoming parades for them. I think one of the most touching things in the book is the homecoming for Bill Reed in Marion, Iowa, where the whole town comes out to celebrate him coming home. And America really needed heroes, and the Flying Tigers were those heroes in those early moments of the war when the war felt unwinnable. And then there was still a war going on, so a lot of these guys went back. Bill Reed Reed ends up being goes back to China. He's later killed in combat. You know, these guys go on to do incredible things. Happy Boyington, who listeners might be familiar with, there's a TV show called Baba Black Sheep about the Black Sheep Squadron later in the war that he leads. He's kind of an underdog character in his own ways. And he ends up becoming a prisoner of the Japanese. And he's shot down as he ties for the most number of enemy aircraft shot down. And his story is just an incredibly powerful and touching one. And so they go on to do all kinds of different things. And the thing that I found interesting was that, you know, for a lot of these guys, they went on to, after the war, to do all kinds of different things. Some of them became farmers, pilots, lawyers, doctors. But for all of them, being a flying tiger was the thing that kind of defined them most in life. So these reunions would bring them together and they could kind of relive what that meant. And those are, you know, those reunions, the same ones that I ended up going to just, you know, over the past couple years, though obviously now there's only a couple left, and it's mostly these families that are working to preserve the legacy of the Tigers.
Well, it's an amazing book. It tells an amazing story. The Flying Tigers, the untold story of the American pilots who waged a secret war against Japan. The book is published by Viking. Sam Kleiner, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. And the book's available anywhere where books are sold.
Excellent. Sam, thank you very much.